We haven't seen unemployment this low in almost two decades. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The U.S. unemployment rate dropped sharply in April. It fell to 3.9%. At the same time, the U.S. added 164,000 jobs. Chris Lowe is chief economist with FTN Financial in New York. He joins us to sort through it all. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Sabri.
So 164,000 jobs is actually less than people were expecting. And normally we might imagine that, well, that's not good. Not enough jobs being created. But there's another way to interpret it.
Yeah, that's right. It appears, looking at the whole April employment report, that the problem was it's getting really tough to find people to staff those jobs. So non-farm payrolls rose 164,000. You've got to sort of look at that in light of the 134,000 weather-affected gain in March. And obviously, the average is quite a bit below, you know, the recent trend, which is about 185,000. But at the same time, the unemployment rate fell. And it didn't just fall a little. It fell from 4.1% to 3.9%. It's below 4% for the first time since December 2000.
And why did the unemployment rate fall so sharply?
The big thing is that the labor force participation rate fell. But of course, that doesn't really answer your question. I suspect it's because the federal government has cracked down on immigration. Immigration was pretty strong in January and February, but it has slowed to a trickle in the last month. And when the economy's toward the end of the business cycle, immigration is sort of essential to labor force supply.
The image that I'm getting from these numbers is a bit like the economy is trying to squeeze milk from a stone, trying to get as many jobs as it can. But a lot of people have gotten hired. And yet, wages don't appear to be growing that fast. How is it that you can have such a low unemployment rate, but wages are still not growing?
Well, I think the answer to it is that there is a lag, and it's a demonstrable one. The unemployment rate about 9 months ago is what determines wage growth today. It suggests that we're probably going to see that wage growth toward the beginning of next year. And that's what Fed policymakers are going to have in mind when they meet in June. It's almost certain they're going to raise interest rates for a second time this year.
All right, Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sabri.
So many cities have faced rising home prices and rising rents. In Seattle, for example, the median home price is around $625,000. One of the last remnants of affordability there can be found in mobile homes. But even there, mobile homeowners say they're being pushed out by skyrocketing real estate values. So some are finding new ways to stay put, as KUOW's Anna Boyko-Wyrock reports.
In SeaTac, Washington, the airport is booming, property values are rising, and Francisco Rodriguez says he's feeling squeezed.
It's been really stressful for everybody, for my kids, for me and my wife, you know.
Rodriguez has lived at the FERS Mobile Home Park in SeaTac for 11 years. There are plans to redevelop the land into apartments and a hotel.
I don't know where I'm gonna go.
Mobile homeowners like Rodriguez own the structure of their houses, but they pay rent on the land underneath it. At this park, that's $500 a month. Rent that low is rare here, says Stephen Norman, who heads the King County Housing Authority.
The rental housing in the region is getting increasingly less affordable, so this just adds to the pressures.
And a lot of mobile homes are too old to move.
In many cases, if you picked up the home, it would fall apart.
Occasionally, the housing authority steps in and buys a park, but this one is valued at over $10 million, so housing officials say it's too expensive. Nearby, some mobile homeowners are finding another way.
The community is kind of like a family.
About 45 minutes from SeaTac, Danelle Knopp is playing tag with the 2-year-old from next door. She lives at Duval Riverside Village, a 25-unit mobile home park. In 2012, the residents formed a nonprofit, got a loan, and bought the land under their homes for $1.2 million. Instead of rent, the homeowners pay dues at around $500 a month to the association, which pays the loan on the land. It's one of about a dozen resident-owned mobile home parks in Washington state and about 1,000 across the country. Knopp says the residents are invested.
It's ours. We're going to take care of it. You know, if there's a water leak somewhere, we're quicker to fix it together as a community.
The homeowners also run the park, so they control the finances.
We get to choose what we spend our money on.
And the future of the park is in their hands. In Duval, Washington, I'm Anna Boyko-Wyrock for Marketplace.
Theranos was once an up-and-coming tech startup created on the claim by founder Elizabeth Holmes that a whole array of cumbersome lab tests could be done quickly and easily with just a drop of blood using her technology. The SEC says that was a fraud. The company is basically worthless now, and so are the investments of a lot of high-profile people, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos among them. Her family invested $100 million in Theranos, the heirs to the Walmart fortune, and the Cox family also took big losses. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.